might be localized in space, the wave is not localized. The wave is spread out. Okay, so a particle, say just a free particle, I take a little electron and I throw it like this, that particle is doing something. Okay, and as a particle, we would think of it as sort of localized, but as a wave, we think of it as, we describe it more or quantum mechanically, as some kind of a wave moving to the right with a momentum, or associated with a particle of momentum plus p, is this wave moving to the right with a wavelength lambda equals h over p. Okay, and then we realize that, okay, what if we stick this thing inside a box? Well, it's going to bounce around. Classically, it's going to just be oscillating back and forth like this. Quantum mechanically, we're going to get a reflected wave. Okay, so we're going to have a wave now moving to the left like this, associated then with a particle which moves to the left, okay, and with the same wavelength. Okay, and if we take those two waves and add them together, what do we get? Standing waves. So we'll call this psi right. This is a wave moving to the right. And we'll call this guy psi left, a wave moving to the left like this. And what we discovered is that in terms of waves, we're going to have a superposition of those two waves and get a standing wave. In terms of particles, what it means is the particle is in this weird state in which it is simultaneously moving to the right and to the left. Okay, so we get this standing wave here. So this is our box. And we put the edges of the box, the boundaries of the two ends of the box, we locate them at two nodes. Okay, and suppose there's a node in between, so we're dealing with the first excited state. And so our standing wave looks like this. So it starts out like this, and then this side moves down, and this side moves up, until eventually it's the negative of that. And then the whole thing just oscillates back and forth like this. Okay, and then we said, okay, let's interpret that wave. So this is what we'll call psi. So the sum psi, which is a function both of position x, this is the x-axis, and time. It looks different at different times. This is our psi right plus our psi left, a superposition. Okay, and then we said we interpret this thing, psi, as having something to do with the probability of finding the particle at a certain location. Okay, so that wave allows us to calculate the probability pattern. Okay, so we interpret the probability pattern, okay, which is a pattern in space x at any time t, is just the square of the amplitude of that wave. Okay, and we got that interpretation by looking at the double slit. Here we have a source of particles, and that source of particles we found there's some kind of a probability pattern, so it's likely to hit here but not likely there, and so on and so forth. And so we give up the idea of trying to follow the trajectory of any one of those particles, and we just accept the idea that all we can tell about what's going to happen is probabilities. And we calculate those probabilities by assuming there's some kind of wave with wavelength lambda coming through here, and we look at the corresponding psi, we square it, and we get p. Okay? So are we happy with that? Huh? Okay, so far we've been ignoring this time dependence. So we say, yeah, at t equals 0, say, the standing wave pattern looks like that. You know, later on, it's the negative of that. And still later on, we're back to the original pattern and so on. It's oscillating back and forth. So if you think about the time dependence of that wave and our interpretation of the square of that wave as a probability of finding the particle, are you still okay with that? Do you see there's any potential problem with that? Yeah, classical mechanics is out the window. But apart from that, we're okay with that? Think about what happens to this wave as time goes on. It starts out looking like this. What does it do as time goes on? Right. Okay. So the point is, at t equals 0, at time equals 0, our wave looks like this. Okay? And half a period later, the wave is going to have switched sign. This one will have come all the way down. This one will have come all the way up. So this is at t equals period divided by 2. Period is the total time it takes the wave to go down and come back up to its original position. That's capital T. Okay, so, and then also at T equals capital T, it's back to its original shape. But what happens at T equals, say, a quarter T, a quarter capital T? What does the pattern look like? It's just flat. It's just zero. So this has come down to zero, and that's going up from negative up to zero. Okay, so the problem is, say, for example, at T equals one quarter of a period, what we get is psi at that time is just zero. Okay, in terms of a classical wave, it's moving. This guy's going up and this guy's going down, or vice versa, but it's zero at that instant of time. So that means that the probability pattern, we just square that and we just get zero. Okay, so at this time, say T equals zero or capital T or big T over two or whatever, when we square this, we're going to get a pattern, you know, which looks something like this with two lumps like that. And we say, oh yeah, well that tells us that at that instant of time, if I look in that box, it's likely to be found around here or here, but not around the nodes. Okay, but then as time goes on, T equals a quarter, capital T, it's just zero. And there's no probability of finding the particle anywhere in the box. So where has the particle gone? Okay, but by definition, it ain't outside the box. By definition, this is a real hard boundary. Okay, we're not letting it outside. We're jamming it between our hands. We're not letting it out. It becomes a wave. But it already, in a sense, it's already behaving. We're already using wave ideas to describe its probability behavior. Goes to Hawaii. Vacation. Yeah. how many like that idea? That's absolutely correct. Okay, so yes, it enters another dimension, so to speak. It enters the complex dimension. Okay, so it turns out that these waves that we're talking so it turns out that these waves, which we've been thinking about as real waves, cosines and sines sort of moving through space, that pattern moving through space, turns out that the waves that describe particles moving through space, either free space or confined to a box, those waves are waves of complex numbers. Okay? These are waves, these are real number waves. The actual waves which describe particles are complex number waves. Okay, so let's look at these complex number waves. Okay, so here's the real axis. So just remember the idea of a complex number. So the idea of a complex number is this is the real axis, and this is the imaginary axis. A number that is real lies somewhere on the axis, on the real axis. A number that is pure imaginary lies somewhere on the imaginary axis. A general number, general complex number lies there. So if its real part is A and its imaginary part is B, then we say that that complex number is A plus I times B. And then we have all the weird things that happen with complex numbers when we multiply them together and all that stuff. So Stefan talked a little bit about that at the beginning. Okay, so what we have with a particle moving through space is there's a real part and there's an imaginary part. So let's first plot the real part. So what we're doing is we're imagining a particle. So this is actually the x-axis. So we're imagining a particle moving to the right along the x-axis. And so we're going to have a real wave like that for sure. Okay, so it's maybe a cosine wave. So we're taking a snapshot of the particle at one instant of time. And it's that wave distributed throughout space looks like this. Its maximum, say at this point, it's maximum. At this point, it's zero. At this point, it's negative maximum. This point it's zero, and so on. Okay, so the wave looks like that. If we were to let time run, that whole pattern would move to the right. Okay, so this is a wave moving with positive momentum. Okay, so it's like that. So now we have to add an imaginary axis here. Because the wave at any instant of time is not simply a real number, it's a complex number. So we add an imaginary axis here. Okay, and this is also a wave. Can anyone guess what kind of a wave is? If the real part is cos, what is the imaginary part? Sine. Good guess. Okay, and sine starts at 0, okay, and it will be maximum when cosine is 0. So it'll be maximum out here, and then it will come back. It will be 0 here, and then it will be, I always mess this up. Okay, so okay, it's a maximum here, and oops, no, it's 0 here, and then it becomes maximum back here, and then it becomes 0 here, and then it becomes maximum positive here, and then 0 here, and then maximum negative over there. Okay, so I'm drawing a wave coming out of the page at you along the imaginary axis, and it's a sine wave. It starts at 0. Okay, so that whole pattern moves to the right with the speed of the wave. And so if we take this snapshot, say at some instant of time, and we look at, say, the wave at that time, well, it has no imaginary part. It's all real. Okay, and so in our complex plane, it's some number on the real axis right over there. Okay, if we look further down, we see, oh, at this point, it has no real part, but it's maximally maximum imaginary part. So it has no real part, it's maximum imaginary part. Okay, and if we go further down, now it's no imaginary part, but it's all real, but it's negative maximum real. Okay, so it's negative maximum real with no imaginary part. And you can see as you go around, it actually just circles around. It goes around in a circle in the complex plane. That's how that complex number behaves. Okay, so how many would like to see the mathematics of this? Is that a majority, do you think?
Close enough.
Close enough. Okay. So I'll just write it down very, very quickly. So if we add those two waves together, we have a cosine wave and a sine wave. So it's okay, so I promised to keep mathematics out of these lectures, but so I'm introducing a tiny bit here, just only when it's a majority vote, or close to a majority vote. Okay, so this is what the wave looks like. So how many of you looked at that quantum exercise, standing and traveling waves, real? How many of you worked through some of that? Okay, a couple of you. Okay, so you might have seen this. So P is the physical momentum of the particle. E is the physical energy of the particle. H here with the bar through it, as Joost pointed out this morning, is just Planck's constant divided by 2 pi. Okay? And so this describes a wave moving to the right. It's a cosine, real. And then this describes a wave moving to the right, which is a sine. And then there's the pure imaginary unit there. Okay? So do any of you remember what Stefan said about the sum of cosine theta plus I sine theta? Where theta is just whatever junk you have inside the argument. What is that? Yeah.
Yeah. E to the I, all that junk.
Right. So this wave is just E to the power I times this junk. 1 over h bar px minus et. And a complex exponential, e to the I theta. Okay, so let me just write that out again. It's I theta, it's cos theta plus I sine theta. And so it's just a number which lies on the unit circle. If that angle is theta, then this is, of course, cos theta, and that's sine theta, which is a unit circle. Okay, and so that wave is really just a complex number on the unit circle. Okay, just moving back and forth and so on and so forth, just rotating around and around. Okay, so that's the sort of the mathematical expression for it. Let me show you a really cool applet. So this is an applet which was developed by a student of the first International Summer School. Actually, when it was just the Canadian Summer School, the Young Physicists of Canada, So this is one of your colleagues has developed this applet for your enjoyment here. Okay, so let's see here. Let me see if I can find it. Okay. So it's a great way to visualize a complex wave, what that actually is. Botan, yeah. He was Mr. Java. He was totally into Java, and he was like really good at it. And so he said, I can make a Java applet of that. And I said, cool, let's do it. Okay, so what you see here is this. Okay, let me just actually run the thing first, and then it'll be clearer. Okay, so play. Okay, so what you see on the left-hand side there, the red, you see two waves. I'll just turn it a little bit so that you can see that, in fact, there are two waves there, right? So so right now that's a cosine, and when that one's a cosine, the other one is a sine. So there's one sort of going up in this plane, and there's one in the plane that's perpendicular to that. And if one is a cos, one is a sine. Okay, and so that's this pattern over here. Okay, and then the idea is, well, how do we add the two of them up? We just add the two of them up as we would add up vectors. Okay, so at any point on this wave here, say at that point over there, okay, we're dealing with a complex number. Okay, so the real part of it is, say, a little arrow, say, along, it's a little arrow along the real axis, say, of that length. The imaginary part is a little arrow along the imaginary axis, say, of that length. And when we add those two arrows up, those two vectors up, we get a resultant vector, which is just at some angle. Okay, so you can see that the sum of these two arrows produces the sum of these two red arrows, the cosine and the sine, add up to produce a complex number at every point, having a real and imaginary part, which is just this yellow vector. Okay, and you'll see that the vector, as the wave is moving to the right, this is describing a wave moving to the right, right along here. You can see that it's sort of like a corkscrew. Okay, so it goes like this. Okay, so that's a that's how quantum mechanics describes a free particle moving along the x-axis with a corkscrew kind of wave like that. Okay, so I just want to remind you that this corkscrew wave is basically a superposition of right and left. Okay, so it's some sum of right and left. Okay, so now comes the question: what happens if we put that kind of a wave inside a box? Okay, so now here's our box, say between these two boundaries here, and we're going to have this wave. Hard to draw here, but it's this corkscrew type wave moving to the right. When that corkscrew wave moving to the right hits this boundary, what's going to happen? It's going to reflect, and we're going to have a corkscrew wave moving to the left. So what's present inside the box in general is corkscrew wave right, corkscrew wave left, both of them together. There's a superposition of those two possibilities, okay, plus momentum and minus momentum at the same time. So that's what we're going to do with the second part of this little applet here, is we're going to add two of these. Okay, so the purple is the left side of the box. The blue is the right side of the box. The particle classically is bouncing back and forth with some momentum plus p or minus p. But quantum mechanically, Botan is going to show us here a corkscrew wave coming in from the left here and a corkscrew wave coming in from the right. And then in the region in between, those two are going to overlap and they're going to add up to produce something. Okay, does anyone have any sense of what it might be? So a standing corkscrew wave, kind of, right? It's a standing wave of some kind, but there's something complex about it. Okay, so let's try it out here. So on the left here, you see the green traveling wave moving to the right. On the right, you see a blue traveling wave moving to the left. And when you add them up, you get that yellow, those yellow arrows. That's a pattern of the wave. Okay? And so what you see is exactly that kind of sine wave, that kind of standing wave sine wave, but we at one moment we see it sort of face on, at the next moment we see it in the pure imaginary. Okay, if we just could only access the real, we would see this thing, okay, blinking in and out of existence. Okay, but we see that it actually exists. It exists all the time. Once it's pure real, at one time it's pure real, a quarter of a period later it's pure imaginary. The next quarter of a period it's pure real but negative of it. Next quarter of a period it's pure imaginary, and so on. Okay, so that's that. So let's see. Where did that chart go? So a way to see this is, I'll just sketch it again here. So that's just the sine wave between the two nodes here. And this is real, and this is imaginary. And this pattern here, whatever pattern we got, if it's the lowest state, it's this. If it's the first excited state, it's this, et cetera, et cetera. That pattern rotates. Just take that pattern on a piece of paper like this and rotate it around through the imaginary. Okay, so here's a question. Sorry? So yeah, so it's a one-dimensional box, and the waving that's happening, well, let me ask you, if this is a one-dimensional box like this, when we were drawing these waves here, that's a standing wave. Did you have a problem with that? Were you okay with that?
Well, no, that
what's waving?
Yeah, that sort of shows like a numerical value each point.
Yeah, so don't, okay, like one way to think about this, like when you see pictures like this, the usual thing that picture is representing is a string, which is fixed at two ends like this, and you pluck the string like this, and it's vibrating in this standing wave pattern. Okay, so the vibration is actually, if this is the x direction, then in space, the vibration is actually in the y direction. Okay, well, that's not what's happening here. So there is no y direction. Okay, it's a one-dimensional system like this, and all we have is numbers. At every single point on the x-axis, we have different numbers, and we're just representing those numbers in some abstract space, which is not associated with real space. Okay?
So there is actually no change in the probability. It's always the same type of point.
That's the point. That's right. So what we're looking at here is the probability is only the length of those yellow arrows. And the length of those yellow arrows is static. Okay, and we're going to get to that. But first I want to ask you, what do you think is, let me just remind you here. So this describes, say, a particle with energy E. So remember we've got, there's zero, there's E0, the ground state, there's E1, the first excited state, E2, et cetera, and this is the energy E. Okay, so we've got a particle in some state. This diagram corresponds to this state, but it could be any state. So we've got a particle with some energy E, and we see this pattern, this fixed pattern, rotating in the complex plane. How rapidly does this pattern rotate? What is the frequency of rotation? What do you think that is? Yeah, it's 1 over capital T. How is it related to the energy, you think? What is that?
V is equal to Planck's constant by frequency.
Right. Okay, so Einstein's formula E equals Planck's constant times frequency. Frequency is just the energy of the particle divided by Planck's constant. Okay? So a particle that is in the ground state energy, well, a low energy is small, the frequency of rotation is going to be slow. It's going to rotate only slowly. Okay? If we stick it in an excited state, like up here, okay, so then the pattern looks like this, okay, and that whole pattern rotates around like this, around this axis, and it rotates around with a higher frequency. Yeah?
Maybe I'm like imagining it wrong, but Well, when it rotates, yep. Are there times when it's only an imaginary axis then?
Yes.
So then what happens at that point?
Nothing. Yeah, so there are times when it's just pure imaginary.
Like the whole thing.
Yeah, the whole thing. Yeah. Oh, what happened to it? It stopped.
Yeah, perfect for my example. We'll get lost as soon.
Okay. Okay, I think Lotan's program kind of crashed on us. Anyway, so I'll have to send him an email. Okay. So when it's in the real, we're okay with that, right? And you're having a problem when it's in the pure imaginary. But why don't we have a problem when it's at 45 degrees?
I'm fine with that.
But it's like partly imaginary, partly real.
Yeah.
I would think that'd be worse than like pure imaginary.
Well, I think both of these are bad.
Okay, so they're both pretty bad. Okay, so it turns out that what comes to save the day here is so remember that this brings out the point that this wave is a complex number. Do you see any complex numbers in the real world? Like, what is the temperature of this surface? Is it 4 degrees plus I7? No. So, like, all numbers that we see are real numbers, right? And so somehow, the wave that we're talking about here is complex. Okay, and so we have to convert a complex number to a real number. Okay, so how do we do that? So suppose we have the number, say 3 plus I4. Okay, so that's a complex number. What's the most natural way to convert a complex number to a real number? Multiply by its complex conjugate. Okay, let's multiply by its complex conjugate. So here's 3 plus I4 times its complex conjugate, 3 minus I4. So what's that? 3 times 3 is 9. 3 times 4 is 12. Negative I12. 3 times 4 is 12 plus I12. What's I times minus I?
Minus,
which is 1 plus 1. So it's plus 4 times 4 is 16. And notice that there is an imaginary part here and here, but they cancel. Okay, so you're left with a pure real number, which is 25. Okay, and if I take the square root of that, what is that?
5.
Okay, so by taking the complex number multiplying by itself, I'm taking 3 squared plus 4 squared. I'm really doing this squared plus this squared. I'm doing Pythagoras. Gives me this squared. So I take the square root, and I get that. So this is called the magnitude. So if I take a complex number like that and put bars around it, I mean take the magnitude. Take the length of that number. Take the length of that vector. Think of it as a little vector here. Take the length of that vector. And that's just a real number. Okay, so what we're interested in is just the length of those vectors. Okay, which brings us to the main point here, is that the length of those vectors don't change with time. Okay, so now when we take probability, so we used to think about it this way. We take the amplitude of the wave and we square it. And that gave us our probability pattern. That's fine for real waves. Okay? It'll convert a negative number to a positive number, and so our probability will be a real and positive number all the time. Okay, but when the waves are complex, what we need to do is take the magnitude first and then square it. So the probability is the magnitude of psi, just the length of those little yellow arrows in Botan's picture, squared. Okay, so in the example of Botan's amplitude there, the magnitude of those arrows is just a sine function like that. Okay, and when we square that, we get this shape over here. Okay, the point is that this is static. It doesn't change with time. In particular, it doesn't disappear. Okay, with the standing waves we were dealing with before, at a quarter period, they just disappeared. Okay, and the particle is nowhere to be found. Yeah.
Okay, so since these are static, right, and the magnitude always remains the same across the yellow, what difference does it make to us if it rotates? Like, why do we care about the rotates?
Good question. we will see why we care. Okay. So in and of itself, that's right. So if a particle is just in one of these states here, like maybe it's that state or that state, then yeah, we don't care about that. But what's the cool thing about quantum mechanics? What's the main idea?
That you can't know for certain. Okay.
I know.
Okay, that is a main idea. What's the main idea that we've been focusing on? It's possible for things to exist in multiple states at the same time, superposition. Okay, so we can put a system in, say, that state all by itself and just sit there, or in that state all by itself and just sit there, or we can also put it in a superposition of those, and that's one particle, and that's going to get cool. Okay, so anyway, so these states that we've been talking about so far, so if it's in this state by itself or this state by itself or whatever, the probability pattern does not change. The probability pattern is static. Okay, and so these are called stationary states. Okay, so we've solved the problem of the particle blinking in and out of existence. There is a, by the way, there's an exercise here which will lead you through some of the math involved in this in case you're interested. Okay, so let's look at this in terms of pictures again. So we're gonna take the same thing that Botan has done. We're gonna look at a different applet. Okay, this different applet shows the same thing that it's frozen. It's totally frozen. Okay. Right. So where is this? It is here. There's a bug in there, right? Everything's going to crash. Okay. All right. So what we're going to do is we're going to look at the particle in the box. Again, what's the problem here? Hello? Okay. Oh, this is now frozen. Okay. I don't want to reboot the thing. It's going to take 5 minutes to reboot. Says it's running. Okay, let's kill this. End. Bye, Botan. What is it doing? That it's using 72% of the CPU power. Okay. Oh, there we go. Okay. Excellent. Let's put that down. Oh. Okay. So this one is, there's lots of cool applets on this site. So let's look at this applet over here. Okay. So. Okay. So first of all, what we're going to do is we're going to look at the wave function here, magnitude and phase. So that complex number that sits out front is called a phase. Okay. And we can select, let's just clear this, we can select different states. So let's just select the ground state. Okay. Oh, wait a minute. Hang on. Stop radiation. Okay, so there's the ground state. Okay, so what is that showing? Just to connect with what Botan's applet was showing, Botan's applet had this kind of picture with the arrows up like this, and those arrows, that the pattern was the same, but all those arrows just rotated around. Okay, that rotation around is called the phase. And what this applet is showing is the same pattern, that sine wave pattern, except it's showing the phase, instead of having the whole thing rotate around, it's showing the phase as color. Okay, and you can see there's this little clock thing down here rotating around and around and around. Okay, so when that little clock is at the very top, that wave is pure real. When it's a quarter way around, it's pure imaginary. When it's halfway around, it's pure real, but negative of what it was before, and then negative imaginary, and then back to real again. So it cycles through that. Okay, so everyone understand what that applet is doing? Okay, so so now let's look at the probability. So the probability for probability, what we do is we basically just we kill that rotation, we kill that phase. We just look at the length of those little arrows. Okay, so we look at the magnitude of this complex number, and then we square it. Okay, and so what we're going to get is just if we look at the probability, we get that. Okay, it's just a pure static distribution like that, which is just saying that at any instant of time, the probability of finding the particle, say, around here is high, around here is low, and it doesn't change with time. Anytime I look at the box, it's the same situation. Okay, yeah?
Why is the highest point of probability wave not at?
So it's pretty close to the center. It should be right at the center. The highest should be right at the center. So maybe it's a tiny glitch. It's a one pixel glitch in the... What do you mean? Oh, not the yellow wave. It's just the white one. The yellow. Forget about the yellow wave.
Okay. There was a yellow wave.
Yeah, yeah. Forget the yellow wave. That's something else.
Yeah.
That's if you want to send an electromagnetic wave through. Okay. So that's the probability pattern if you're in that state. Okay. The zero point motion state, the ground state. Okay. We can also look at other ones. Okay. So this guy here. If we look at, say, the wave function again, magnitude and phase, so this is describing, just so we get more familiar with what this applet is showing, what it's describing is the first excited state, that's this guy, E1, and the real standing wave that we're used to is this, going up and down like this. But what it does, in fact, is take this picture here and rotate this guy around this axis. Okay, and so at one instant of time, it looks like that, and then half of the rotation later, it's the negative of that. Okay, so now what you see here is actually two lumps going up. Okay, but you'll notice that at any instant of time, they're different colors. Okay, so this lump over here, maybe this lump is positive. This lump is just positive. Then that lump, I can also draw this lump down here, up here, and label it negative. Okay, so it's 180 degrees. Out of phase, it's called. Okay? So do you understand this picture now? Are we okay? And so that's the wave itself, the wave function, that standing wave rotating around in this complex space. Okay. Now, if we just kill the... if we're just interested in the lengths of those complex numbers and just look at the probability, again, it's just perfectly static like that. Okay, so if we have a particle in that state E1, then its probability pattern is like this at any time that we look in the box. Okay, it's just completely static. Okay? So now, of course, the interesting thing is, what if we were to consider a superposition of those two states? Okay, so here is, so we have a particle in this state and in this state, which is possible, right? In the classical world, it's not possible to have something doing two things at once, but in the quantum world, it is. So if we do that and add that up, then... actually, let's just do it first. Let's try to guess what it's going to do.
How
do we do that? How do we put in a superposition? Physically, we use a photon.
Why does we put one half of itself? Why do we
both? See, we will get to how you physically do that shortly. But let's just suppose we can do it. So mathematically, what do we have? Okay, so mathematically, we have this situation over here, this wave over here, okay, and this guy is rotating around and around and around at some frequency F0 equal E0 over H. So okay, so that's this wave. And then we want to add to it the wave function for the first excited state. That's this one. Put it in a superposition in which the system is simultaneously in both. And this guy is rotating around at a greater frequency, F1 equal E1 over H. And the frequency is greater because the energy is greater. How rapidly it rotates is related to the energy. Okay? So let's say at t equals 0, say, the waves look like this and this. Okay? They haven't done any rotation yet. Okay? When we add these two waves up, what are we going to get? Okay? So let me just sketch this out down here. So this wave is this guy. And we're adding to it this wave, which is this one here. If we add those two, what do we get? What happens on the left side of the box, say? We've got a positive number here. Oh, we've got all positive wave here and all positive wave here. If we add that up, we're going to get a positive wave, right?
Yeah.
On the right side of the box, we have positive and negative. What's going to happen?
Cancel.
Okay, so the wave will look something like that. Okay? Now let's look, say, suppose that this guy is rotating around, I don't know, say 1.5 times faster than this guy. Okay? So at t equals 0, they both look like this. When this guy has rotated fully around once and has returned to the same position, since this guy's rotating 1.5 times as fast, it will have rotated around how many times?
1.5.
Okay, so the one time it will return it to this, if we have an extra half in there, what's it going to do to that wave?
It's going to change the rotating.
If I rotate this by half a rotation around, what's going to happen to that shape? It'll go the opposite way. Okay, so now we're adding the same this guy over here, but we're adding the negative of that guy, okay, which goes down like that and up like that. Okay, so now on the left side of the box, we have a positive wave added to negative wave, means its amplitude is small. On the right side, we have positive added to positive, and we got that. Okay, so at one instant of time, the wave function looks like this. Sometime later, it will look like that. Okay. So let's look at that. So let's set up. So this is wave function. So that's that wave. And if I just click on this button over here, it will add the second wave to it. And we have a superposition. Right? Now remember, when we're measuring the position of the particle, we don't care about that phase. We don't care about the angle that complex number makes. We don't care about the color. Okay, so if we just look at the lengths of those of each of these complex numbers at any instant of time, just freeze it at any instant of time. Okay, then we're going to see. This is what we're going to see. So the colors represent the angle of the complex number. So at every single point in space, say that point over there, that number is it's a changing number. First of all, its length is changing. The height of that curve is going up and down like that. So its length is changing, and its color is changing. Its color is the changing color means it's a complex number with a different angle. Okay, so
it just represents the rotation. It just represents the rotation.
Yeah.
That's right. So, well, it's a little bit more complicated now that the two of them are added together. So at any instant of time, let's just look at this location in space at right now. It's a complex number of a certain magnitude, which means it's a vector of some magnitude lying at some angle depending upon the color. Okay, so if the color is red, it's a complex number of that magnitude at that angle. If the color is green, it's a complex number of the same magnitude at the green angle, and so on. Okay? And so when we're looking at the probability of finding the electron somewhere, what we do is we don't care about that angle. We just kill the angle, and we're just interested in the length of that arrow. Okay, so let's just kill the that angle there and look just at the probability. Okay, what I mean is we're taking. So right now, what's on the screen there is the total wave psi as a function of x and t. Okay, so you see it obviously depends upon x, the horizontal position. It also depends upon time. It changes as time goes on. And it's a complex number. If we just take the magnitude of that guy and square it, that's the probability of finding the particle somewhere. Okay, so if we do that, then we get this. Okay, so it's sloshing back and forth. Yeah.
So how many energy states can we put in at the same time?
Any number you want. Okay, just hang on. We will put it in all of them. Okay, so what you discover about this is, okay, at any instant of time here, so let's just, I wonder if we can, can we stop this? Okay. Anyway, so at any instant of time, if we sort of freeze frame, say when it's basically all sloshed over to the left here, just freeze frame, like right now, okay, what we have is a probability pattern, you know, that looks like this. Okay, it's mostly in the left side of the box. So if we were to look into that box at that instant of time, we would most likely find the electron to the left of the center point. Okay? And then when that probability distribution is sloshed over to the right, sometime later, if we looked in the box sometime later, then we still don't know exactly where we're going to find the electron. Okay? But the probability pattern now looks like that, sloshed over to the right. Okay? We're most likely to find it on the right. It might still be at the same place. Okay, there's some probability of that happening, but it's more likely that you would find it to the right. So what does this describe? This describes essentially a particle, as time goes on, sort of semi-classically sloshing back and forth, moving back and forth. This red line here indicates the expected value of the position. So at any instant of time, if you were to look in the box, you would get lots of different position measurements, and if you were to average all those out, you would get this red line position.
Okay? Does that probability ever go to zero? Like that right there? Does that read zero, or is it just really, really, really small?
It goes to zero here. Yeah. Yeah, it can go to zero. Okay, so. What do you think the frequency is of this oscillation back and forth? The frequency, when it's if the particle were just in that mode, the frequency is F naught. When the particle is in that mode, this guy is rotating around with a frequency F1.
Is it limited by the lower one?
Is it the average of
B1
and E naught over A?
How would it be the average? Does this pattern only exist in one?
Because the frequency is equal to the energy. But which energy?
Which energy? Okay, yeah. Yeah, which energy is it? So one idea is it's sort of the energy in between. If it's got this energy and it's got this energy, then the energy is kind of in between, so the frequency should be kind of in between the average frequency. Does that make sense?
No.
How many are happy with that?
No.
No. I have a strong no here. What is it? Oh, it's just this one.
Yeah.
Okay. Why?
Because like.
What about this one? You don't like this one?
No, it doesn't have enough energy to go higher. So it decides to go lower.
Okay.
So it's emitting energy.
It's emitting energy? Who said emitting energy?
Well, if it's in between but it goes down to E naught, then that means that the rest of the energy that it has
has to be emitted somewhere.
That's for somewhere. Not really.
Okay, so it turns out that the frequency, and if you think about it, just you know, think about this. What you've got is some like, imagine a piece of paper here rotating at some frequency, and here's another piece of paper rotating at a bigger frequency. Okay, when these guys, the times it will take for this guy to coincide with this guy again. Is or one over that time is going to be related to the difference in the frequencies. Okay, so it turns out that the frequency, and this will be very important, charge. Frequency of that red arrow, of that red line sloshing back and forth, is the difference in the two frequencies. Okay, and if we express that in terms of energy, that's going to be E1 over H minus E0 over H, or delta E divided by H. So here is E0, here is E1, and delta E is the difference in the energy. Okay, so this thing sloshes. When you put it in a superposition of being both in the ground state and the first excited state, the probability pattern sloshes back and forth with a frequency that depends upon the difference in energy between those guys.
Speed over F?
Sorry, say? The difference between the energies is E1 minus E0. Yeah, it's the same as, well, it's this. So F1 is E1 over H, and F0 is E0 over H. Yeah.
So this is all in a, like an N number of quanta difference in the energy. Like, delta is always an N number of quanta energy. As in, like, it's always like EO to, like, E2, EO to E1.
That's right. So delta E is can be, so if you put it in, say, a state which is superposition of this guy and this guy, then it will oscillate at a frequency whose which is this energy. The difference between that and that divided by H. So it's always the difference in the frequencies. Oh, okay, so we're going to take a break, but just a second. Let me just say one more thing here. Just 5 more minutes here. So at the end of the day, so what is all this useful for? Well, it turns out that this is related, this is the process by which systems emit and absorb photons. Okay, this is physically what's going on. Okay. So let's see here. Suppose that you started with a system like this, which was in the ground state. Sorry, you have a system with two possible states, E0 and E1. Okay. And you start with the system in the excited state. Okay, so the particle is in this excited state. And then what you do is you send a photon in. Okay, you send a photon in whose frequency exactly matches or exactly is associated with that difference in energy. Okay, so we send a photon in of frequency f or energy hf, hf equal the difference in energy, E1 minus E0. Okay. And so what that does is the presence of this photon induces this system to make a transition from being just in that state to being in a superposition of these two states. Okay? And when that happens, it starts oscillating back and forth like this. Okay? And so semi-classically, you can think of this as say a charged particle sloshing back and forth with the frequency f, frequency of that photon. Okay, what if I take a charged particle and jiggle it back and forth with the frequency f? What is it going to do classically? It's going to emit electromagnetic waves classically. Okay, it's going to emit radio waves, light, whatever. Okay, and the frequency of that light is going to be f. So it's going to emit. So classically, this is basically a system emitting electromagnetic waves of frequency f. Okay, and it will do so for a time long enough so that the energy emitted is exactly the energy of one photon. Okay, and then it will drop, so that in that process it drops down to this state, this E0 state.
How fast does it emit the energy?
Very fast. I mean, so you can easily calculate it. So in an atom it's very fast.
I mean, like, what is it? Like, what's it depend on?
It depends upon how much energy needs to be emitted and the frequency and all kinds of stuff. Well, a little bit. It's a little bit. It's not a big deal, but it's more complicated than we can go through in 30 seconds. So, at the end of the day, what happens is the original photon goes in. It sets up this superposition state, and then the original photon goes out. That's it, while the system is in that superposition state, it is in the process of physically creating a photon, generating a photon, and it does so by sloshing back and forth like that. And it emits a photon. And the wonderful thing about that photon which comes out, which comes from this energy drop over here, is it is exactly identical to the photon that came in. Mm-hmm. Exactly the same phase, okay, because photons are bosons. Okay, so there are fermions and bosons. Fermions don't like to be in the same state, bosons like to be in the same state. Okay, so if this guy over here sees that photon and says, oh, I want to be in the same state, so it creates another, a second photon in exactly the same state. What do you think that might be useful for?
Laser.
Entanglement. In this case, I'm thinking of a laser. So a laser is light amplification by stimulated emission of radiation. Okay, this is stimulated emission of radiation. You have a system that has extra energy. It's poised to get rid of that energy. You send a photon through. It causes the system to emit that energy and produce an identical photon. So you started with one photon, you end up with two. Okay, so it's light amplification by stimulated emission. You're stimulating this emission.
It's already in the E1 state before you drive.
That's correct. It's already in the E1 state. That's right. And that's it. So that's the process of emission. And we'll look at this for a really cool applet when you come back to do with a real atom. What does an atom look like when it's emitting and absorbing photons? Okay, so let's have a quick break.